And welcome back. I'm Lisa Wexler. I'm reporting to you live from Orem's Diner. Joining me this morning is Tony Wong, state senator from the 28th, which represents and encompasses a very wide range of districts in our very wide range of towns in our area: Westport, Weston, Newtown, Sandy Hook, Fairfield. Keep going, Tony. I'll let you take it. You know your district. Easton.
You know, it's five distinctly different towns.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Which town do you live in?
I live in Fairfield.
Okay. And let's hear about you a little bit. I know you've got a wife and two kids, right?
Yes. They're all saints dealing with people in politics.
I bet. And you've been doing this for 12 years?
12 years, but also 3 years on a local level, which has been a great training ground. And I would encourage people that are looking to get active in politics. You don't need to run for national office. There's need all around you. There's tremendous ability to get involved on a grassroots level.
You know, it's so funny you should say that, Tony. So I have been in New Hampshire the last few days, and we broadcast live our show from New Hampshire yesterday. And a guy that I interviewed, he asked for an interview. Okay, I gave him a few minutes. He's actually running for president. He's on the ballot in 10 states. You've never heard of him. I never heard of him. And I'd been in New Hampshire for days. And he is running as a Republican. Now, when you look at the ballot in New Hampshire, you'll see a litany of people as Democrats and Republicans that you don't even know their name. So I asked the guy, have you ever run for office before? No.
No.
What makes you think you can be president? Oh, well, that's so ridiculous.
Well, I think the challenge is ultimately public service is such a noble effort.
It is.
But at the same time, the idea of serving and experience and the insight that you bring is beyond measure. And we talk about experience, the ability to understand issues and to not only look at it on a superficial level and never having made decisions. It's sort of like for your incredible role as a probate judge for people that have never done it and then, you know, make decisions and second guess without having the real pressure and the real responsibility of decision making.
You know, I didn't become a judge till I was 53. And the first thing I thought to myself was nobody should be a judge unless they're at least 40, 45 years old. Because how do you judge other people until you've been through a little bit yourself?
And I agree. And from the challenge of life experiences, it gives you gravitas. It gives you perspective. It gives you empathy.
Absolutely.
And one of the challenges we have right now is we have so many policymakers that came through that rush of 2018 and have never had policy debates. And it's equivalent to making policy of impacting people's lives when you have no experience about its consequences. I always jokingly say, if you've never served and made decisions in public policy, it's literally Monday morning quarterbacking and having never stepped on the field.
So let's talk about that, because the session opened last Wednesday, and it seems that Governor Lamont is not going to be happy until he gets some form of a toll. He had held up a bonding package for a long time. He seems insistent. He's willing to make compromises on the scope, at least right now, of the tolls, but he seems insistent on setting up this independent, non-accountable, bureaucratic new transit authority that will have a budget, I'm told, of $40 million if the budget goes through. And we all know that that's a patronage situation of giving jobs initially, and then will be something that will institutionalize with its own pension and benefits as it goes forward. And frankly, it gives legislators a cover for increases in tolls where they say, well, the transit authority has recommended that we need this, because this is what happens in New York and New Jersey every day. Well, the Port Authority or whatever authority, the New York State Thruway Authority, they are recommending that we need the tolls, and they must know more than we do.
It is, you know, I applaud the governor in his understanding that infrastructure and transportation needs to be a priority. I think Democrats and Republicans all agree to that.
Oh, yeah. Len Fasano came up with a pretty healthy plan.
And the governor's CT 2030 outlined in his website is a compliment to him for a transparent allocation of what we need to do, from rail to bridges to infrastructure. But this toll bill that we're considering has none of that. it is insufficient in regards to funding for the plurality of projects that's outlined in 2030. It has zero mention and zero allocations of dollar for our rail.
I thought that was the biggest priority for
Absolutely.
This governor.
But the fact that this bill that we're going to consider and we had the public hearing on has no mention and no dollar allocation for rail system. And for me, representing southwestern Connecticut, particularly in Fairfield and
We live and die by Metro North, Tony.
And there's no mention of this bill. And in fact, Hearst Connecticut Media came out in their entire editorial board from Stamford to Norwalk to Fairfield, West Bridgeport, Westport to Danbury in a unified editorial said that this bill is insufficient and that the legislature should reject this bill. It is a toll bill simply for tolls, not for infrastructure. And the creation of that transportation policy board in which the public and lawmakers give up their accountability is stunning to me.
Stunning.
Stunning. And the fact you mentioned about the MTA and the Port Authority. How many people knew that on January 5th of this year, the Port Authority increased tolls on every toll in New York?
How would you know? They don't even tell you on the Easy Pass. They just want you to drive through and then get the bill at the end of the month. They don't even tell you the number anymore.
There is no transparency. There's no accountability. It's, in essence, a free blank check. And it's the taxpayers that are paying. And I think the other parlance that we hear so much of, nobody truly believes it's going to be trucks only. Nobody. And the third issue that's not been addressed, and for me, representing Westport and Fairfield, we have not addressed the quality of life challenges to residents that will be impacted. Westport has one of 12 tolls going over a bridge. We have the Cabrera Bridge, which does not allow truck traffic. The fact is, you're going to have leakage from toll evaders, even if you have 15-20%.
It's going to be a huge impact on the local neighborhood.
You and I have sat in Post Road.
Oh, please.
We have crossed over bridges in normal traffic. Can you imagine if we had leakage, how much it would impact public safety, community safety, commercial businesses?
And the other thing is, I looked at some of the details. We're chatting with Tony Wong, and we're at Orem's Diner in Wilton, and we love being in Orem's Diner in Wilton. We're here once a month, early in the morning, for a cup of Joe show, and I encourage you to come, and you can look on my Facebook page, Lisa Wexler Facebook page, to see when we're going to be here next. But the other thing about this, Tony, which is really astounding to me on the toll issue, is that nobody is talking about how much money. They've already assigned a dollar value of at least $6, possibly as high as $13 each way. So between Westport and Greenwich, a company, a tractor troll driver, going back and forth will pay an extra $26 a day just to go between Westport and Greenwich, a potential $26 each way. In other words, back and forth. If they are going from, you know, the top of the state to the bottom of the state, and then they have to come back in that same day, and it's a minimum of $12 a day. That's not insignificant. It's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. And I will share with you, just yesterday, I had a conversation with Jones Farms.
A wonderful farm.
And the idea that he shared was the fact that we have to compete with Pennsylvania in regards to the minimum wage differential. And for
it's gonna
us,
kill him. It's going to kill small businesses.
If we have to transport our goods down there, It's going to affect people's pocketbooks. But ultimately, this bill doesn't solve the problem, right? Our infrastructure, our rail improvements, it's just a toll bill to get it in place. And it's insufficient funds. It's poorly thought out. And why are we rushing? So, why such a rush is remarkable to me.
So Tony Wong, is the fix in anyway? In other words, has the backdoor deal been already shaken hands on?
I believe that the people have spoken very loudly, and for us to delay this process, it shows that, look, this isn't a Democrat-Republican issue.
I don't think it is either, but, I mean, some people would posit it that way, but I don't think it is.
Not at all, because the fact that the Democrats in the House and the Senate have significant majorities, and if they wanted to pass this bill, they would do so, just like they did with the minimum wage, the paid family medical leave. The reality is there are Democrats that are actually listening to their constituents who are concerned that tolls is going to impact their quality of life and their ability to make a living and
here in Connecticut. Exactly.
And that is the crux. It's not a Democrat-Republican issue. It's people listening to their constituents. And that's really a good telltale sign for democracy in play is ultimately, no matter how much the fix is in, we don't have a bill right now because people have spoken up. And that's powerful to me.
Okay. What committees are you on, Tony Wong?
I am the ranking member on public safety and security, as well as higher education and employment, and also in housing.
And housing.
And we've been very active in regards to addressing our housing needs, but also the consideration of 830G.
And Governor Lamont has said that affordable housing is another one of his priorities.
Absolutely. And it should be all of our priorities. I think before we can accomplish anything in regards to creating access and quality of life for every individual and every child in our state, we have to ensure that they have an opportunity to be in a safe, secure, and a protected environment when they go home every day.
And we're having more and more people that are going to be aging out of income. We're going to have more and more seniors that are going to require the kind of housing they can afford in a safe, reasonable, relatively small compared to, in other words, we're going to have an issue of downsizing in our state, but we want these people to stay in Connecticut. I'm not interested in having everybody export to Florida or down south because our older population is stable. They care about voting. They volunteer immeasurable hours in our population. I don't want them to have to go anywhere. But when they come off of a salary and they look at a much more fixed income, they're going to need more housing.
It's not just that population, which is important and integral part of our community, but it's also diverse housing to be able to afford those that are economically disadvantaged as well as socioeconomically challenged.
Yes.
To be able to get access into broader communities. And that's been one of the battlefields in the sense that the suburbs versus our urban and the economically affluent versus the economically struggling. And sometimes our suburbs have gotten a bad rap on this.
I know.
And one of the dynamics I'm trying to address is people need to understand towns of Westport and Fairfield were one of the most innovative people in regards to housing access.
Westport has a homeless shelter right in downtown Westport.
Fairfield and Westport had one of the first homeless shelters in the entire state of Connecticut. But the problem is our current A30G statute only looks at housing stock that are deed restricted and post-1990.
No, it's a problem. And it also doesn't take into account a town like Weston that has a lot of so-called in-law apartments that actually end up meeting affordable housing criteria, but maybe the person doesn't want a deed restricted forever, so they can't count it towards an inventory. There has to be more flexibility in the statute.
I am working very hard to create a public-private dynamic that not only includes, you know, local and private developers, but look at state and federal to be able to collaborate. Federal tax credits, being able to use some land that the town and the state can give. The bottom line is land costs in Lower Fairfield County are prohibitive. And you have a town like Easton, which is 1 acre, 3 acre minimum, and it's nearly 75% watershed.
Mm-hmm. And it's so beautiful.
It is, but it's also an understanding.
And we need that watershed.
And we need to understand their unique complexities.
Yes, we do.
Not just in the suburbs, but also in our cities, because there may be ample housing in the cities, but they're not inhabitable.
Well, and there's a problem because, in my view, there's a prejudice built into the statute that all poor people, people of lower socioeconomic means, want to live in multifamily housing, and that's not the case.
Not at all. And I think housing is a great equalizer. Being able to access to quality life and education are equalizers. Listen, Lisa, I know better than anyone else as an immigrant coming from Taiwan at 9 years old, I spent the first 2.5 years of my life in a federal housing project.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it was the most wonderful experience because for the first time, our family was united and we had a sanctuary of a home and family and an opportunity to be able to live and pursue the American dream. look, housing is critical to
me. It is.
Housing is critical for anyone that wants to set the stage to pursue the American dream. I'm excited to be part of the solution, but it's got to be a compromise with local input.
Tony Wong, thank you for joining us on the Lisa Wexler Show today. We'll be right back.